As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Good morning, welcome to the Daily Football Briefing from The Athletic. It's Friday the 26th of April. I'm Michael Bailey, and on today's show, City win as the Premier League's top two edge clear.
It would take something we haven't seen from City in years to drop below Liverpool from this point.
Will the feel-good factor continue for Villa?
Emery signing this new contract means he's even more loved than he was before, and that's difficult to think of.
And it's Champions League crunch time for Emma Hayes.
The Champions League is the one trophy that she hasn't won in over 11 years at Chelsea. Could she reach the final on Saturday by knocking out Barcelona?
This is the Daily Football Briefing with Michael Bailey.
Manchester City did their job at Brighton in the Premier League title race last night, kicked off by a Kevin De Bruyne collector's item and rubber stamped by more goals from Phil Foden.
Way to pass to Walker. De Bruyne with the header. What a goal. Just outstanding. Steele. Balaba. Now Barco. Foden. In it goes again. 3-0 City.
Brighton were probably third best on the night, but City's 4-0 win means it's 30 games unbeaten in all competitions. More importantly, they're now 2 points clear of Liverpool and a point behind Arsenal, with a game in hand on both. Your Daily Football Briefing buddy and mine, Tim Spears, has seen all three title challenges live in action this week, and he joins us now from the Amex. Tim, I'm sure it's been very fun. Can you wrap up what you've made of the three teams?
Arsenal, I guess, I was very impressed with them. It was a really complete performance, albeit against a terrible Chelsea side. But what really struck me at Arsenal was the overwhelming sort of feel-good factor. I went straight out after full-time. It's basically like they won a trophy. Very united fan base. A club very comfortable in its own skin, you know, whether they win the league or not, really. So you feel like the future's secure for Arsenal, less so for Liverpool. All kinds of problems with them ahead of what's going to be a tumultuous summer. I was shocked by how weak they were, how submissive they were. Everton basically wanted to win that match more, and that's exactly what happened. I feel like Liverpool's belief has completely eroded in recent weeks. And City, yeah, at their very best, I've got to say, I was really impressed with them. You know, they struggled at times in the FA Cup semi against Chelsea, but here they were absolutely on it. Sharp passing, great pressing. Brighton are very, very bad. They've only won 3 games this calendar year. So I would take that into account before crowning City.
I think you've almost answered that there, but I'm wondering if this was the week for all those who have been enjoying a 3-horse race that maybe now have to accept it's down to 2. But also, you look at the table now and you kind of realise that this is actually Manchester City's to kind of throw away now, even after all these games.
Yeah, I think it almost certainly is 3-2. I mean, Liverpool need to win all 4 of their games. Friday's a really important day for Liverpool because Klopp just needs to get a hold of them in training. He needs to provoke a reaction. He needs to select the right team because half of them don't look match fit to me. And obviously, the desire's in question. Realistically, City have a game in hand on Liverpool and they're 2 points ahead. So it would take something we haven't seen from City in years to drop below Liverpool from this point. You can't really predict or forecast that will happen. But I do think there will be twists and turns still to come. I don't see it as being as simple that City and Arsenal will win all their remaining games and that's it. City have got Spurs away. We know the problems they've had at that stadium in the past. But then so have Arsenal. And of course, you know, an awful lot rides on this weekend.
Which will be fun to find out. Just finally, who's the player or players that you kind of noticed coming to the fore that could help decide all these things over the coming weeks?
Spurs have all three teams to play, remarkably. So you'd pick a Spurs player, probably. I mean, someone like Mickey van de Ven or Son Heung-min for the title teams themselves. Salah for Liverpool, if he somehow rediscovers his true form, then he can sort of propel them to four wins. But it looks unlikely. He's a shadow of the player he has been in the past. For Arsenal, Odegaard, you know, was gorgeous the other night, absolutely ran the show. And City, you've got to say Phil Foden, two goals, one incredibly lucky. He falls over and wins a free kick. Jared Gillette gives it. Definitely not the best a man can get, Michael. And then the free kick deflected in. But he's become their man for the big occasion lately. But honestly, I'm looking at Spurs really as kingmakers. Arsenal at home this weekend, Liverpool away next weekend, and then City at home in the midweek before the final game. They're the danger. And we know, because they've done it already this season, that they can beat any team on their day.
Thanks, Tim. The Premier League title race continues when Liverpool head to West Ham in Saturday's lunchtime kickoff. Man City's next assignment, as Tim mentioned, is a late Sunday date at Top Flight Toddlers Nottingham Forest. But before that one, it's the leaders' turn, and what a game it should be. Arsenal head to North London rivals Tottenham, who are still hoping to pip Aston Villa to fourth place and a Champions League spot for next season. Spurs will be fresh. They've not played since losing 4-0 at Newcastle a fortnight ago. In that time, Arsenal have played three, won three, scored nine, and conceded none. Speaking on our excellent Arsenal podcast, Handbrake Off, here's Adrian Clarke.
Remember last year, first and foremost, I know this is it's a different manager, but we went to the into the cauldron and we owned the game. So we've proven that we can handle that sort of atmosphere. The highline tactics won't change ever under Ange, we know that. So they're going to press us, they're going to squeeze up to the halfway line. And because we've got Martin Ødegaard, one of the best, well, actually statistically he is the best through ball maker in the Premier League. I expect us to slip plenty of passes in beyond that high line. They don't have their first choice fullbacks fit and available. I think Pedro Porro and Destiny Udogie are a big part of what they do. There's just three little tasters of why we should be confident. I believe that as a style match, we have the game to unlock Tottenham, because they leave that space in behind and we've got players that can absolutely hurt them in those situations.
Meanwhile, Liverpool's step towards finding their successor to Jurgen Klopp appeared to move a step closer last night. Speaking ahead of his Feyenoord side's 3-1 win at Go Ahead Eagles, Arne Slot went on the record to ESPN Netherlands, stating it's clear he wants the Liverpool job and he is confident an agreement will be reached with his Eredivisie club for him to move on. And sporting director Dan Ashworth is set to take Newcastle to arbitration to help make his move to Manchester United happen. That news was broken exclusively by our own David Ornstein yesterday, and here he is.
Newcastle United want around £20 million for Ashworth, whereas Manchester United don't intend to pay anywhere near that. Manchester United are prepared to wait it out if needed. Newcastle United show no signs of blinking, and therefore Ashworth has opted to take matters into his own hands. He is set to take Newcastle United to arbitration in a bid to bring some clarity to the situation and resolve it. He'll have the backing of Manchester United in this case, which we expect to begin in May and last for a number of weeks before we have an outcome. That decision will not be made by Newcastle United or by Manchester United, but by a third party. In the meantime, Newcastle United continue with their own process to appoint Ashworth's successor. And it emerged that among the candidates that they are considering is Dougie Friedman of Crystal Palace. But equally, there is no resolution to that situation either.
You're listening to the Daily Football Briefing from The Athletic.
If you want to sample a good atmosphere this weekend, then Saturday night at Villa Park may well be the place. Aston Villa are hoping to secure a Champions League berth for next season. They host Chelsea, and this week, head coach Unai Emery extended his contract to 2027. Our Villa correspondent Jacob Tanswell joins us now. Jacob, the table looks good for finishing fourth, but are those two games in hand for Spurs adding a bit of pressure?
They are, but I think for Aston Villa, they rather have the points on the board. And if you look at Tottenham's fixtures, where they, you know, they face all the title contenders, it's a pretty daunting run for them. So I think Villa are pretty comfortable with where they sat.
And it's been a great week. The news that Unai Emery is extending his contract and his stay, and there clearly are long-term plans to have Emery as Villa's manager for a long time to come.
Yeah, they want to build a dynasty, the owners with Emery. They've, you know, they're liking it to Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger. And I know that's pretty dramatic and, you know, pretty ambitious, but that's how, you know, the owners sing. They want Emery to stay for, you know, 10, 15 years. And although in, you know, modern football, that seems outlandish, Emery signing this new contract means he's even more loved than he was before. And that's difficult to think of.
They have been in the Europa Conference League this season. Does it feel like the club is ready to then go on into Champions League football for next year?
Do you know, if you asked me that a couple of months ago, I'd probably said no. But the fact they've managed to balance Conference League and league commitments so well is, you know, it's a testament to where they are. And, you know, Emery is this elite European coach with a CV in Europe, which, you know, pretty unrivaled in the last decade or so. So I think from that perspective, coach perspective and the current players they've got, then yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and just finally, I'm guessing Emery will have discussed that with the board around his new contract too, but is he going to have the ability to improve the squad as he wants this summer? Because I'm assuming there are some pretty significant financial fair play issues to balance off as well.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult, and it's very important that Villa are proactive and, you know, they balance things really, because at the same time, I'm sure they've given Emery confidence that he's going to have money to spend. He will strengthen the squad, no doubt, with, you know, his trusted confidence to really reshape the squad how he wants. He's in charge of it all. But at the same time, they have got this PSR issue, and it's going to be difficult for them. But Champions League should help. It's around 35 million they'll get for just qualifying. Then if they win games in the group stages, etc., they'll get more money. So that should help.
Thanks, Jacob. And one piece of Chelsea team news. The season is over for Enzo Fernandez, who has undergone groin surgery. It means the Argentinian faces a race to make this summer's Copa America. Elsewhere this weekend, in Serie A, it's third hosting second as Juventus welcome AC Milan in Turin, while Roma will head to Napoli off the back of a dramatic added time winner last night.
Dybala verso Cristante! Cristante! In campo anche De Rossi, perché la Roma all'ultimo respiro segna il gol del 2-1.
Yes, that Brian Cristante header sealed a 2-1 win for Roma at Udinese. This was the game that was abandoned at 1-1 after 71 minutes earlier in the month when Evan Ndicka went down clutching his chest. The defeat leaves Udinese above the relegation zone by just goal difference. Bundesliga champions Bayer Leverkusen host third-place Stuttgart as they bid to keep their season unbeaten. And in France, a win for Paris Saint-Germain at home to relegation-threatened Le Havre on Saturday night will guarantee the Ligue 1 title. This weekend also sees a huge moment in the European season with the second leg of the Women's Champions League semi-finals. Here's host of the full-time Europe podcast, Sophie Penny, with what to expect.
For Emma Hayes, this could be the crunch point of her final season at Chelsea before moving to the US Women's National Team. The Champions League is the one trophy that she hasn't won in over 11 years at Chelsea. Could she reach the final on Saturday by knocking out Barcelona, who beat them in the 2021 final and in the semi-finals last year? Chelsea go into the second leg 1-0 up after a defensive masterclass that led to Barcelona's first loss at home in over 5 years. Last time round, the key for Chelsea was their back five, keeping their shape in midfield and the runs in behind from Mayra Ramirez. The question is, can they pull off a performance like that again? Will Hayes stick to the same tactics? And should they fear an angered Barcelona? Barcelona will be looking to move the ball faster and get their key threat, Caroline Graham-Hansen, into the game more. Barcelona are two-time champions and the holders, so it would be foolish to write them off. In the other semi-final, on Sunday, PSG host Lyon in the all-French clash in Paris. Lyon are eight-time Champions League winners, and they'll be looking to carry forward their momentum from their 3-2 win in the first leg. That game ended very dramatically. Lyon were 2-0 down with 10 minutes to go, but they scored 3 goals in 6 minutes to take home the win. That means Lyon are now 6 games unbeaten against PSG. PSG have reached the final 2 times. The last time was in 2017 when they lost to Lyon on penalties. This game could also decide the Women's Champions League top scorer, as the current leader, Lyon's Kadidiatou Diagne, is just 1 goal ahead of her former PSG teammate, Marie-Antoinette Cototo. Reports by The Athletic and elsewhere suggest that Lyon manager Sonia Bonpastor is the frontrunner to replace Emma Hayes at Chelsea. So should Lyon and Chelsea win this, we could see the current and future Chelsea managers face each other in the final in Bilbao.
And you can listen to Sophie and the gang in a fresh episode of Full Time Europe, picking apart those semi-final results after Sunday's full-time whistle. What a fabulous amount of football to look forward to this weekend. Whichever games you follow, enjoy the drama. That's all for this week from the Daily Football Briefing. I've been Michael Bailey. Your producer was Mike Zimmerman, with Ian McIntosh as our executive producer overlord. And it's Mike Zimmerman who kicks off next week for us all come Monday. In the meantime, have a stellar weekend.
The Athletic.